Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Tuesday afternoon. I just finished school, got home, and let me do a talk about something not negated to the war and all that serious business. It'll take a little bit of relief. This is being sponsored by Chaim Lazaric from Mexico. Chaim Lazaric. And who's involved with Kirov over there. And usually he has all these ideas I should talk about, and I usually don't like those topics, but now he came up with a sponsor, a podcast on Judaism throughout the ages being either, pro or anti-proselytizing. It can be relevant to Avraham Avinu, either at the start of his mission or when it says, Anevesh Asher Osi Bacharen. So this is a question I consider it's a light topic. I mean that in a good way, compared to the war. Is Judaism a missionary religion, historically speaking? That's actually very interesting. And the reason I say it is that it's yes and no. I mean, Avraham Avinu, obviously, that's different. If you talk about historical Judaism, let me put it this way. We don't really have any record in the biblical period of Jews going around and missionizing. That's just interesting. As a matter of fact, the opposite is the Goyim who were very successfully missionizing among the Jews in the period of the Tanakh. That's why so many people went up worshiping other idols and things of that nature. We all know that. What about the other way around? Verves. They say the Shlomo Melch, that's why he lived the life of Riley, so he can impress people and be Makar with them. I don't know, maybe. Right? But there's no, you know, talk of this. When the Queen of Sheba visits Jerusalem, she doesn't come back being Jewish. So as far as I know, forget the Bayis Rishon period in terms of any kind of records. But when you get to the Bayis Sheni period, it's very different. Now, the first thing you have to understand about Judaism is that, particularly outside of Eretz Yisrael, Judaism was very decentralized. A lot of the institutions that we associate with Judaism today started in the Bayis Sheni period, including the Kehillah and the Shul and things like different Chevras, because people lived in Chutz La'aretz, a lot of them. And obviously you're not going to be a player in terms of the Karbonos that are brought in Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael. And so on the other hand, you're living in Rome and Athens and Alexandria and this place and that place, and you want to stay Jewish, they're just organically formed, and by a Sheni period, different groups of Jews would come together, and eventually they had what we call a synagogue, and eventually they came up with the idea you need a minyan, and all the things we take for absolute granted really kind of date from that period, Anshei Kesedola and afterwards. In fact, formal prayer, the Rambam says, starts in Anshei Kesedola. And I'm sure that's an oversimplification. The Rambam at the most is talking about Shemoneh Esrei, but there was the concept of what you and I call davening and the forms we have it date from this period. So what am I talking about? The Jewish religion as practiced in Chutz La'aretz, let's say, for example, in time of Bayis Sheni, which was hundreds of years, okay? Because I'll say 420 years. Historians will say 560 years, whatever. So there were Jewish communities that popped up all over the Mediterranean, shall we say, in places like that. And also in Asia, in Bavel and Persia. After all, Haman says, Yeshnam echad mefuzim for b'chol ha-medino samelach. So there are Jewish communities everywhere. In the period I'm talking about, the Jews stood out because they were not pagans, and everybody else was in one form or another. It's a very interesting fact that under the Persians, the Greeks, and then the Romans, there was no insistence that the Jews should switch their religion. Instead, you had, roughly speaking, what we would call today freedom of religion, roughly speaking. And the Jews organized what we call a synagogue, a basic Knesset. Synagogue means a place for people to get together. And somehow or other, they popped up the idea of Kriyas HaTorah. And now, were Jews missionizing? Not exactly, since they're decentralized. Let's put it this way. The Christian religion later, as we'll see when it popped up, was into missionizing from the top down. The Pope and everybody else said, go missionize. They sent people to go and spread the faith, either persuasion or by the sword. The Muslims, while not directly, hierarchical, but they did have a caliph and all the rest of it. And they also sent people to go missionize and spread the faith. The Jews, as we all know, certainly in Chutz La'aretz, never had like a pope or anything like that. And the Sanhedrin, as far as we know, and the Kohen Gadol, the priestly set up in the base of Mikdash, there's no record of them sending out people to go missionize and tell them to become Jewish. Quite the opposite. A guy should shove us as Chai Misa. So, nevertheless, it is a metzius that individual Jews operating totally on their own were kind of missionaries. What do I mean? I mean several ways. Number one, you're a Jewish guy and you have a store or something in the bazaar in the market. Next door to you is a guy that you're friends with because you have stores next to each other, assuming that you are friends. So we have plenty of records of this sort of thing. Sooner or later, they're going to bring up religion. In the beginning, you don't talk about religion. In the beginning, you talk about the weather, talk about the sports, talk about whatever, the movies. Sooner or later, the guy says, why do you wear that thing on your head? Or whatever the Jewish way was. What are those little boxes you wear in your head and your arm? What are those fringes you got over there? Now, mind you, the pagans had their mishigas also. And so, you can be sure that just on a completely informal and unofficial basis, a million discussions popped up between Jews on the one hand and people who are not Jewish on the other. All over the Mediterranean, the diaspora, all throughout what we would call today the Roman Empire and those kind of places, the Persian Empire. And X number of people were persuaded or attracted either through these arguments or maybe by visiting a Jewish community or visiting and participating in the services in the synagogue or maybe going to what you and I today would call a shir, whatever the version was at that time, speeches on virtue. And maybe we say, this is the religion for me, or I'd prefer this than my own church. And in the classic years, which means the Greeks and the Romans, let's say for argument's sake from 300 BC to 100 CE or something like that, maybe even later, we have records of, as Tacitus puts it, the scum and refuse at old earth abandoned their own religions and joined this new Jewish business. There was, in general, a crisis of faith. I've spoken about this before, that historians know about in the Hellenistic era and even afterwards, when the paganism lost its oomph for a lot of people. Now, it retained its oomph for a lot of people also, but nevertheless, it didn't seem to provide satisfactory answers to the great questions of life. And people were looking for things other than the belief in Zeus and Hercules and all the rest of it. All sorts of people, upper class, lower class. And in general, it was a time of crisis for the host religion, the religions of the Roman Empire, especially in the Eastern Mediterranean where the Jews located. And when people dropped religion, or the religion of their ancestors, or started to have sphakis in them, doesn't mean they totally gave it up. After all, Avraham Avinu in our parsha, they say, didn't become completely divorced from paganism until the age of 48. Habit, family, things like that are attractive. So they didn't totally drop their business, their old beliefs, but many of them came to be attracted either to Judaism or to aspects of it. The idea of an invisible God who's beyond, the God who created everything, therefore there's a beginning to the world, a right and wrong system, a morality system, Ten Commandments, or maybe you like to go to the synagogue because in the old days they had the Kriyas HaTorah with the system of the Meturgamans, which a Meturgaman doesn't mean you just translate it, but you go and give a whole franchise, as they say, on the Parsha. My goodness, what you could do with Lech Lecha. right? I mean, the Midrugim could get up there and say, I say to all of you today, Lech Lecha, you know. And Mi'aretzcha Melada Beis Avicha, that's actually speaking to a pagan. Lech Mi'aretzcha Melada Beis Avicha, El Oretz Asherecha. My friends, I want to lead you from the false religion to the real religion. And we know, we have records, that a lot of guys like this stuff. They did. And how should I put it? They were attracted, and some of them became fully Jewish. Many of them became partially Jewish. After all, it's a big call to tell somebody go and circumcise. Or it's a big thing to say no more shellfish, you know what I mean? No more crabs. Or whatever your zach is. And therefore, there existed, in much of the Bayashani period, if not all of it, large numbers of people in different places who hung around synagogues and Jewish communities in one way or the other. Maybe they like to go to a Shabbos meal, a Kiddush, whatever. And it's not the pshat that somebody was formally missionizing among them, proselytizing, but from this intercourse that I'm describing, from this contacts that became part of daily life in so many places across the Mediterranean and elsewhere, you're going to pick up X number of people who say, I want to join. This is the religion for me. Maybe I like the community side. Maybe I like the theological side. You know, whatever it is. The theology is not so plushy. I've said many times that people think that monotheism makes all the sense. And that's not necessarily true. Truth of the matter is paganism, in some ways, seems to reflect reality more than monotheism. Simply because if there's one God and he's good, how come there's so much bad going on? Why did the Hamas go and kill everybody the other day, you know? I know Jews, you can come up with answers, but usually they'll say, that's a good question, you know, like that. Whereas a pagan will say, no, you know, stuff happens, and it's just a matter of mazel, you know, statistics that somebody somewhere is going to be a victim of something. And the chaotic nature of life is one that seems that way, you see? Seems that way. That's why from people look for silver lining in stories, you know, and they say, see, this person was Shomer Shabbos, and therefore he wasn't there at the kibbutz when it was attacked, you know, that kind of thing. To give you a feeling that there's, you know, somebody running the show. But a pagan said, there is nobody running the show. All I can tell you is that there seem to have been plenty of people that were attracted to Judaism. If you want to call that proselytizing or missionizing, you can, but there was nothing like a formal group centrally directed that said, go out and bring, win as many as you can over to us. As a matter of fact, if anything, the Jewish attitude was the attitude of being burned by the Erev Rav, which is a story that goes back to the very beginning. And it turns out we would have been better off if the Erev Rav never joined. So that's like a counter-gear narrative, so to speak. You understand? Who wants these people? They're going to cause trouble, make things worse. Now, you also have examples, not only of the Arab, but you have examples of Basparo and all. We have Ger Tzedek. Okay, that's a different story. Everybody likes a Ger Tzedek. But what about the non-Ger Tzedek, the person who's doing for this reason or that reason? You understand? That's not so simple. The rabbinic attitude that has always been very complex. Right, very complex. But nevertheless, you could say that Judaism, bottom up and not top down, was a proselytizing religion, rightly or wrongly, in Chutz La'aretz for centuries when they're up against paganism. Because people are like that. The same personality it takes now to be a shliach for a Chabad and go out somewhere, that person's ancestor would have been a shoemaker in, Athens thousands of years ago, but just naturally would be the type that when he talks to his neighbors and, you know, and other people not Jewish, he's going to go and make the case for Judaism. You know what I mean? It's just a certain personality. But it wasn't a formal thing, and it wasn't, there were no shlichus, and there was no direction or anything of that nature. So the Talmudic Judaism seems to be against that. But just because the rabbi said it doesn't mean that's what happened to Lamaisa on the ground. On the ground, people are what they are, and some people by nature are the type that they like to argue, and I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, they like to debate. and make the case for Judaism as they see it. You understand? Your religion is not better. My religion is better. In the case of paganism, they seem to have done pretty well. Meaning they persuaded a lot of pagans to come over to their side. Although I don't know how many Mamas became full Jews. Even in the Gemara, there's that story, I forget where, in the Avodah Zarah, that senator, you know, who saved a rabbi or something like this. Remember, his wife said, they're going to kill you tomorrow, you might as well circumcise yourself tonight. Meaning, he was a friend of the Jews, but she said, once you're going to die, you should, you know, have a full bris milah. The exact nature of conversion, the way we use it today, is not clear what was done at that time. Just because you have different opinions in the Talmud doesn't mean that's the sum total of all the opinions. And just because certain opinions among the Gemara and the Rishonim become gelled as time goes on in the history of halachic literature, so that by the time you come to the Shulchan Aruch, you know, you see this way, that way, lav dafka, that's the way things were practiced before all this literature existed. Because remember, the Gemara and all that is from the Gemara's time. And if you see different opinions, as you do in Yavamis and other places, over how exactly one goes about being Magayer and so forth, that means there are different schools of thought. I told you this before, there are some Rishonim, I think it was the Meiri, if I remember correctly, and Shabbos or whatever, where he says, to be Jewish, all you do is just declare yourself, I'm Jewish. You know, it's a little weird, I mean, you know, without bris milah or anything like that. But that seems to be. This is based on the Gemara. How's it go now? Where it says, Tinik Shanish Ben Agoyim, Ger Shanish Gair Ben Agoyim. The Gemara talks about that in, I think, 7th Perek of Shabbos, if I remember correctly. Tinik Shanish Ben Agoyim, Ger Shanish Gair Ben Agoyim. So you never heard of Shabbos. So what's Shach Ger Shanish Gair Ben Agoyim? So, you know, I think Tosers or somebody, I'm going by memory, says, look, the guy lived in Goyshire, he went to a base, and they never told him about Shabbos, that's all. Let's say they were derelict in their duties for whatever reason. But other Rishonim, I think it was the Riff or the Miri, somebody like that, says, Gershon is Gar Ben Agoyim, the guy declared himself Jewish. Today we'd be shocked by such an attitude, by asserting such a concept, but they weren't shocked. You know what I'm saying? No, that's it's one of the ways that people affiliate with the Jewish people. Maybe you, the listener, come from one of those people. I don't know. So it was like sort of something of a dealer's choice, you might say. You know. Now, this is how the situation was throughout the Roman Empire, until the Roman Empire went Christian, which was in the 300s. The early Christians who started, you know, around the year 50, 60, 70, 80, whatever. That's a whole parsha by itself. But the early ones were Jewish. And they, when they were proselytizing, and they were from day one, aggressively, you know, they were trying to proselytize people into their particular form of religion, their particular form of Judaism, which eventually, you know, became a formal separate Christian religion of its own. And a key platform in the Christian Zach was, proselytizing. The Jews, I just told you before, continued throughout this Roman period, and to get the numbers straight, the Roman Empire switched to Christian in the 300s, but they were already around in the 100s and the 200s. So, if you lived in a lot of these towns that I was just describing in the Roman period, there were, so to speak, two synagogues to go to. The one you go to and the one you don't go to. And one would be a Jewish synagogue and the other would be a Christian one. Later called a church. And it's just interesting, you know, this is how these guys operated. There was a certain competition. The Christians, mamish, were going after aggressively after converts. And they were much more successful than the Jews, I think. Mainly because it's easy to be a Christian. You don't have to have a bris milah. You don't have to keep kosher. As time went on, these things evolved. They weren't in the beginning, but in the beginning you did. But as time went on, maybe under pressure to proselytizing efforts, the Christians, you know, let this go and let that go. And, you know, they carried off a lot of the potential converts. The Jews aren't formally looking for converts. So it's not exactly like it was a competition. But nevertheless, in spite of that, there were many people, it seems, that preferred the Jewish. And that's why when the Christians took over the government in the Roman Empire in the early 300s, the time of Constantine, and afterwards, they really made a lot of propaganda and persecutions against the synagogues because they were doing too good of a job in winning converts over. And some of the early church fathers, that's the name you give like to the Tanoim and Amoraim, so to speak, of the Christian religion, cussed out the Jews and St. John Chrysostom, for example, in unbelievable ways because they saw them as competition. Don't go to the synagogue of Satan. Stay away from the Jews. They're bad news. If somebody's got to go and scream like that, stay away from the Jews. What does that tell you? People are going to them. So let's put it this way. The Jewish religion is simpler to understand than the Christian religion. If you think about it. And those who are interested in a more straightforward, simplistic kind of way of understanding ultimate reality were often drawn to Judaism. Especially if Christianity was constantly changing its doctrines in the early years. And anyway, it seemed better. As time went on, and Jews found themselves in Christian environment, Christian governments, so you couldn't I wish I could say the Jews stopped proselytizing, but if I have a store next to your store, I don't care what year it is, sooner or later we're going to talk about religion, and sooner or later you're going to say your religion is better, and I'm going to say my religion is better, and maybe my way of understanding the Chumash will be more persuasive to you than your understanding of the Chumash, and you'll be honest enough to admit that. These things happen a lot. And so, as I say again, on a highly decentralized, personalized, individualized basis, there was still proselytism. You'd think that since living under a Christian environment would shut the Jews up, they'd be afraid of the consequences. It's not so pushy, because since it's not centrally directed, it depends on the individual Jew. And some Jews have big mouths, even if it's not in the interest of the Jewish community to go and do this. This is clear in history. So as you get to the Middle Ages, and the Jews live in Christian Europe, based on the records that I know, individual Jews shot their mouths off and made the argument for Judaism. And sometimes they persuaded Christians. Sometimes they stayed the big shots, like the guy Ovadia at the court of Charlemagne's successor, who was Louis the Pious. He was like a big bishop and all the rest of it. But he used to debate with these Jews. Next thing you knew, he ran away to Spain and became a Jew, from Jew. Matter of fact, he became anti-Christian. It's all kinds of business. The net result was not so great for the Jews because as the Middle Ages unfolded, so Europe came under the Roman Catholic Church, which is centrally directed. I don't blame the Catholics at all. They said the Jews are stealing people away from us, or they're misguiding Christians to go and convert to Judaism, and this is a Shandana Harpa, which from their point of view it was. And as time went on, it became harder to live as a Jew, Bechlal, in Europe, and if you made it worse by, persuading Christians, already Christians, to switch to your religion, you're really asking for trouble. You understand? And this happened. There are places where the Jewish community was persecuted because somebody going and converted a Christian. And so it became part of the Jewish culture, I would call it the Teresh Shavah Peh, so the social Teresh Shavah Peh. Don't go and cause trouble by missionizing. Moreover, the very nature of the Jewish settlement in Europe in the Middle Ages was as follows. In the beginning, after the fall of the Roman Empire, there are no Jews in what you call today France, Germany, England, and those places. Zero. Then they let some of them in under special conditions. You used to have these charters and things like that. And the Jews are asking to be allowed to live there and have the right of law and order, safety of property and things of that nature. Whew. What do we get in return? What do we get in return? You got to at least get it that you're not going to go and try to convert anybody. It became almost like an unwritten law as the centuries went by. We're allowing the Jews to be among us, the few that we are. It's of service and on sufferance. They are here. We can kick them out whenever we want. They better not cause any trouble. It's bad enough that the Jews don't recognize Christianity. If they're going to try to bring others and persuade them also proselytize, that'll be, you know, built in this ball. We can't take it. And we'll either kill the Jews or drive them out or force them all to convert forcibly or something like that. And therefore, it became, over the course of the Middle Ages, and especially in the later Middle Ages and afterwards, just a double push it, that the Jews would say is, don't try to go and convert anybody. Like, don't try to do that. They got scared because Christianity became increasingly harsh towards the Jews towards the latter part of the Middle Ages. Not everybody knows that. Those are the centuries, the 1200s, 1300s, and 400s, when the Jews were basically kicked out of almost all of Europe. And they're really badly burned by that experience. When the Jews started to return to Europe in the 1600s, late 1600s, the way had been cleared for them by the Marranos, by the Portuguese Jews, like, for example, in France and in England and Holland. And these Portuguese Jews were well aware of the fact that they had been born Christian, Catholics, although secretly they're Jewish. And they're very sensitive to the idea of religious identity and maybe being persecuted because they were Christians and now they're Jewish. And they evolved among themselves this notion, which is not historically true, but people believed it. And that was, when the Geimer are letting us into the country, it's all tonight that we won't go and make any converts. I know, for example, in England, when they persuaded Oliver Cromwell and those guys to let the Jews back, the Jews said, and of course, it's on tonight that we won't convert anybody. Now, that wasn't actually true, at least as far as I know, but that's what everybody believed. And therefore, in England for centuries, even though England is a free country, if somebody wanted to convert, they would say, go to Amsterdam. There, there's no rule like that. They would send from all over Western Europe, go to Amsterdam, because there, you know, was more freedom of religion, you could convert. So in those centuries, there was much less conversion to Judaism. Although it's kind of complicated because in some places where the Jewish community is very small, you had a certain amount of intermarriage because there weren't enough girls to go around and weren't enough guys to go around. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying this is what happened. And when someone would convert, someone would get married. So some of the times, you know, the person would convert for that. That's not called proselytism, though. That's called opportunism. You know, that's because they're doing it to get married. So it can't exactly say, you know, that this was a case of being MacGyver. But wherever you had a Christian country and the church felt any kind of a threat as a result of what they perceived as Jewish missionizing, they came down very hard. As a result, it became part of the Jewish folk consciousness to say, we don't want Garim, we don't accept Garim, we're not a missionizing religion. If you want to come to us, that's one thing, but, you know, we're not going aggressively trying to convert people. They're worried about what the authorities will say, and they're also worried about the Erevah problem. And that's where I think Judaism got its image as a non-proselytizing religion. What's interesting to me, now, in spite of what I just said, in every country, each one's its own story, there were certain groups of Goyim, Christians, who encountered Jewish communities among them, and little movements swept this group against the Sabbatniks in Russia, this one, that, and the other one, and they kind of all wanted to become Jewish in a certain way, the same way you're seeing right now as I speak in 2023, here in South America as a group, and there in Africa as a group, and in India as a group, that people just on their own discovering Jews and want to come in on the, you know, and convert. But that's not a result of proselytizing. That's just what they observed, and they decided, you know, to pick it up on its own. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Comes the modern era, so two things happen. One is the Jews get civil rights, and the other one is the Jews stop being frum. Most of them in many places. So that meant, and that's the world you and I live in today, that meant then any kind of proselytism that will be out there is felt goes like this. Why are we going and trying to convert others to our religion? Let's convert Jews to Judaism. That's what they call Kiruv today. You're not trying to bring in people from other religions. You're trying to bring your own into your own religion because so many Jews are not from. And it seems to me that whole energy to bring others into the fold became redirected, certainly in the 20th century, into, I'll use the word Kiruv Krovim. You know what I mean by that. No, it's Kiruv Yehudim. Let's put it that way. That's a better way of putting it. So instead of Kiruv Goyim, is a Kiruv Yehudim. And that's alive and well, meaning that's a movement not exactly centrally directed, because we don't have a pope in the Vatican, unless you're Lubavitch. They do have a pope in the Vatican. I don't mean in a bad way. No, they have a central, you know, operation, and they have headquarters, and they had a Rebbe, and, you know, and he directed people to go and be Makarov people and all the rest. I mean, they're closer to the Christian model. But that's unusual. Most places where they have the Kiruv, it's just something that popped up, as you know, from bottom up, among different individuals in the second half of the 20th century. It's just interesting. And we're living in that now. That has sucked up all the energy as far as I can see. I don't think there's any interest, as far as I know, in going and trying to be MacGyver other people. However, I am well aware that I live in a little cock Baltimore, you know, isolated here from the rest of the country. And I hear from friends and others, when you go to out of town, other communities, you know, in the Midwest and the Far West and those kind of places, I am told, I just had this conversation with Steve Kaplan the other day, I'm told that there are places where it's mamish like in the Bias Cheney period, I think Texas he mentioned, some other places, where many of the people, if not Rove, are people come attending services who are not Jewish, Spanish and otherwise, but they're interested and they're attracted to it. And for whatever reason, you know, they want to convert either fully or halfway or something like that. And so here in the United States of America in the year 2023, we have a little bit of what was there once upon a time in the Bias Cheney period. As far as I know, and again, I'm just in a little Baltimore, I don't think there were rabbis or a bunch of going around trying to actively, you know, convert people who are not Jewish to Judaism. I'm not aware of that. I think, if I understand it correctly, these are just natural reactions that you're going to have among people, that some people are going to find the Jewish stuff a turn off and some people are going to find it a turn on. If you're one of those who finds it a turn on, then you're going to try to pursue it. Okay? When it comes to large groups, and you're having these large groups in these Midwestern, Far Western, Southern places, whatever, I mean, I don't know what the end's going to be. On the one hand, you don't want an Erev Rav. On the other hand, if somebody's a Ger Tzedek, then you do want them. Remember, we daven every day. Al Tzedekim, Al Chasidim, Al Zidim, Al Chobe Yisrael, Al Pleis Avrim, Al Ger Tzedek. So, it's a very complex matter. And therefore, I conclude by saying, Judaism has never been formally a proselytizing religion, but informally, it has, in the sense that individual Jews in all kinds of times and places have taken upon themselves, right or wrong, without asking any questions, to go and proselytize among others who are not Jewish. It's not possible for us to know how many people they did or whatever. I mean, there are no records of that sort of thing that I'm aware of. But you can't. Don't be surprised if you ever hear a story of somebody that, you know, an individual bald boss, a guy or a girl, a lady in this century or that century, she went and hocked somebody else up, and by the time it was over, the person's like, I want to join the Jewish religion. You see? Usually we would say that it's not such an attractive thing because the Jews are second-class citizens and persecuted and all the rest of it. But there's all kind of stories out there. And as I say again, a Ger Tzedek is a Ger Tzedek. I can only finish by saying I remember when I was in Russia, first time, which was in 83, when I got married. So this is under the Soviets, you know, it was still communism. And I went to the shul in Moscow. I think it was. Was it Lenin? No, I think it was in Moscow. And it wasn't on a Shabbos or anything. It was during the week. And I think I'm right about this. And watch this. I saw an old guy, bald old guy, and he was davening there, big kavanah gadola. And the Ruskies over there told me he's a ger. Now think about that. To be Megayer in communist Russia and be a Shomer Shabbos to come to davening, all the rest, and dress with a hat like the others did. I mean, that guy was a ger tzedek big time, baby. You're not gaining nothing in the Soviet Union by converting to Judaism. So those kind of people we want. The person's the real thing. That's a nefesh hashoyas b'charon. I mean, that's the person that you're really making the nefesh over there. So if we had some kind of a Geiger counter, you could tell how sincere somebody is or whatever. That's one thing, but we don't have that. And so the 21st century is not over. Only time will tell what's happening from all these different groups and bunches of people that are converted. They seem to be very, very sincere, the ones that I know anything about. But that doesn't mean their children or grandchildren will be interested in this. It's the oldest story in the book. The parents decided to be BTs. And, he went to Harvard and she went to Yale. Then they flipped and became BTs. But their kids, don't want to be from. And the parents are disappointed. And the kids say to the parents, "You made your choice, I'm making my choice." When it comes to gerus, once you make a choice, you made the choice. It's too late. So the short answer is that Judaism been unofficially a proselytizing religion, but officially not. Anyway, just want to do justice to that theme. And thank Chaim Lazark. We finally came to a subject we both were interested in. And with that, I wish everybody a good day.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.